providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing on with the first hour of the weekend edition of the KE Report. In this segment, we are going to continue chatting kind of broad markets here, taking a look at a couple individual sectors, but trying to get a handle on what is going to work for investors moving forward now that we kind of have the election behind us, but we still have very much COVID around. I am chatting with Mike Larson. He writes the Safe Money Report. You can also follow Mike on Twitter at Real Mike Larson. Now, Mike, moving forward, I know this is still a contested election, or at least the vote counts are being contested, but it kind of looks like we're going to have Biden as the president and a split Congress. Seems like a lot more fighting that's going to happen in politics in the U.S., which will handcuff the Democrats for getting any, let's say, aggressive policies through. What does that mean for your strategy when it comes to viewing the financial markets?
Yeah, I mean, with an election like this, you never know what headlines you're going to wake up to in the morning or so, given some of the legal challenges that the Trump campaign's trying to put out there. But if you read the tea leaves and you look at, you know, more importantly, what the betting markets and what Wall Street are basically arriving at in terms of conclusions, it's that Biden is the likely winner. I mean, they've declared him president-elect in a few places and so on. It looks like he's probably going to win, despite what Trump does to try and fight that. But at the same time, we never had that, you know, the Democrats didn't get the other thing they wanted, which was that fabled blue wave, a taking over of the Senate in terms of Democratic control, winning enough Senate seats to take over the Senate while maintaining control on the House. Unfortunately for the Democrats, the House majority was maintained, but it does not look like we're going to get the Senate majority they were looking for. So what that does, to some degree, ironically enough, at least from a financial Wall Street financial market perspective and from a policy perspective in terms of the Fed, is more of the same. We're in a situation where heading into the election, the Fed was kind of the only game in town. You know, you get all these misleading headlines from one side or the other saying, oh, we're right on the cusp of a big fiscal stimulus bill. It never happened. You know, that was for months and months. We had the initial round of stimulus, the unemployment boosted benefits, as well as the stimulus checks. But that all ran out in the spring, and nothing has really happened since then. That was heading into the election. Now coming out of it, you know, you're not going to see, I think, everybody just shake hands, sing kumbaya, and come up with a $2 or $2.5 or even $3 trillion stimulus like some of the Democrats were looking for. The Republicans aren't going to play along with that in Congress, in my opinion. So what you're likely to continue to see is a skinny delayed stimulus, some targeted help here and there, but nothing that on the order of what we saw in the spring that really moves the needle for the economy, broadly speaking, or the markets. And what we'll see is the Fed try and continue compensating by just printing more money and buying more assets. You know, Jay Powell himself at this week's Fed meeting said that one of the key points of discussion at this meeting was, what should they do with QE? How could they get it bigger? How could they diversify it? Could they buy different parts of the treasury market or different parts of the asset markets and so on? They're not spending this time here sitting around the table discussing this stuff just for their health. They're doing it because Wall Street's demanding more funny money and they're likely to deliver. And I think that, and again, that's especially true if they're not getting the help that they want from Congress or even the Biden administration. While it may want to do more Main Street stuff, it may want to do more things targeted at the middle class, it's not going to be able to get that, or won't have that congressional majority to ram that through. So long story short, the election changes a lot of things from a political perspective. It's going to change some of the you know, other things going on, especially in geopolitics and world relations and so on. But from a pure markets, pure economic standpoint, it really doesn't move the needle much. So I think that, you know, a lot of the same strategies that were working best heading into the election are going to work best heading out of the election and into 2021.
So just more of the same then. But when you're balancing out, okay, some news that'll come out of the election, it sounds like through the rest of this year, balance that out with the COVID cases continuing to rise, lockdowns happening in Europe, potential lockdowns coming to North America, and also the Fed. We heard from them this week. It was a boring statement, but they're ready to inject more money into the system. What out of these are the major drivers that investors need to be aware of moving forward?
Sure. From a real economy perspective, a second wave or even third wave, depending on how you count it, of COVID cases that results in more restrictions, more lockdowns, We're certainly not going to get the full economy lockdown like we had back in the spring, but you're going to see targeted things being done in different states and likely, in most of the country if the numbers continue in the direction they're going here in the U.S. And obviously, as you mentioned, we're seeing more restrictions out of Europe, too. So from a real economy perspective, that's obvious negative. It's going to be bad for those sectors that rely on stronger growth, stronger spending, and so on to prosper. I mean, the same kinds of things that you've seen where, travel stocks, for example, and banks and things like that really need a stronger GDP and more broad participation, they're going to continue to suffer. At the same time, the work-at-home type names, the long-duration type sectors like tech, and many of the safe money sectors, as I call them, things that have higher yields, more defensive business models, and resilient earnings, even in a tough economic environment, they're going to continue to do very well. Things like utilities, consumer staples, some select real estate names. And ironic enough, a small subsector that should do very well coming out of this is the cannabis space. One of my colleagues wrote that, it wasn't the Democrats or Republicans that won, it was cannabis, because we have much more legalization, broader legalization in the U.S., and that trend certainly isn't going away on these ballot issues. So there are the overall message is that there's different spots, there's different battles, places, sectors and stocks and so on that you can focus on, battles you can fight and make a decent chunk of money coming out of the election. But this is still going to be sort of a bifurcated split market where you're going to have these losing sectors like financials. You're going to have energy, which certainly in terms of traditional oil and gas has no friends in the Biden administration, that are going to continue to stagnate. So you really got to be smart about what you own and what you avoid.
Now, Mike, what about economic data? Because even on Friday, we had a non-farms payroll report that was better than expected. You dive into that report and you see that a lot of jobs were added at kind of the services level in terms of restaurants and bars. Those are obviously shaky jobs if we go back into lockdown. Does economic data even matter right now?
I think that, again, people can look at some of this backwards-leaning data and say, sure, it was pretty decent, but yes, we're going to have more COVID-related fear, cutback in spending, especially as we head into these rising caseloads, into the colder weather. So I think people are definitely discounting that to some degree. But at the same time, for Wall Street, for the one percenters, for the asset owners, they like nothing more than more Fed aid, more Fed bailing out and backstopping of markets, more money printing. It sounds callous, but it's realistic. Wall Street doesn't care about Main Street to some degree. Why do you think you can have these outstanding market gains in some of these stocks that are doubling and tripling, even as thousands of restaurants are closing, unemployment's still at very elevated levels, and so on? It's because big business is gaining ground. Big corporations are getting help from the Fed. Wall Street's certainly getting help from the Fed. It's an odd, unfortunate policy mix. But as I always say, my best advice for investors is you have to invest for the markets, economy, and politics you have, not the ones you might want. So that means taking a realistic, bias-free approach to this market and pick your spots. Buy the things that are going to do well in this environment and into 2021, and avoid the stuff that's not, regardless of your personal feelings about it.
Okay, we will get into some more individual sectors, but I do want to ask you about the U.S. dollar, because as we're recording this about halfway through the day on Friday, the dollar is continuing to fall, almost crash, you could make the argument, sitting at 92.22 right now. That's lower than the October low. That's closing in on that early September low of 91.75, and there's a lot of air under that level, that 91.75 level. What's important about this falling dollar in your eyes?
Sure, you're absolutely right. The dollar is kind of clinging by its fingernails here in terms of value, and it's a pretty broad decline against a multitude of currencies. Frankly, it goes back to the Fed, right? If you have a fiscal policy that's not going to be strong, you're not going to get gangbuster GDP growth. You're going to continue to have slow growth with the Fed buying anything and everything that's not nailed down. We've seen in the past that is generally speaking negative for the U.S. dollar, but positive for things like gold, silver, and mining shares. I think it's no surprise that, kind of coming out of this election, we've seen a nice rebound in gold. We've seen a nice rebound in silver and mining shares. And even things like Bitcoin that are sort of the new gold for some people, the, technological gold, if you will, cryptocurrencies are doing very well. So again, it's all sort of an assessment that the market's making, investors are making of, a regime where the Fed's going to do even more. Central banks overseas are going to try and do even more to compensate for fiscal authorities that are either not going to want to do things in some countries, or in the U.S., not going to be able to do them, at least not on a fully ambitious scale that a blue wave plus a Biden win would have empowered and enabled.
Yeah, fair enough. All right, let's also talk about the trade into gold and Bitcoin. Both are benefiting later on this week, actually shortly after the election kind of results, or at least voting day, let's call it. Gold popped higher, but Bitcoin's really making a run, closing in on all-time highs. Is this simply a protective move from traders?
Yeah, I think that, again, it's very much a move that confirms the overall view that we've laid out here in this discussion today. I mean, again, in an environment where the Fed's going to be printing more money to try and compensate for a lack of fiscal action, people can kind of see the writing on the wall. They can kind of see it's coming. I mean, you know, we've been talking about the central bank for years and years. And what do we know happens? The market demands, the market leads, the Fed follows and provides. So it's going to be a situation where the fact that they're even talking about it at this most recent Fed meeting tells you what happens. After they talk about it, they do it. And Wall Street sees that coming, and they're going to front run that. So you're seeing it in cryptocurrencies, you're seeing it in precious metals, you're seeing it in the breakdown in terms of which sectors are doing better and which sectors are doing worse. And I think, again, I think that that's the right assessment. This is, you know, a situation where heading into 2021, you want to stick with those kinds of those horses that got you here, because they're going to be the ones that get a second wind and that, you know, continue to thrive again next year and beyond.
So, Mike, I'm also curious about copper, because copper, as we're recording this, is over $3. It's about $3.15 right now. Keeps moving higher. To me, this election, though, doesn't move us any closer towards an infrastructure build or any sort of injection of capital in this area. Can you explain why copper continues to move higher?
You know, I think that some of that is tied to growth overseas. I mean, places like China that rebounded strongly from the COVID downturn earlier, they're doing pretty well now. So some of that, I think, is tied to that kind of resilience. But I think also, again, you know, you make a good observation, and I would tend to tilt my metals investments more towards precious metals versus base, because I do think that, you know, the slow growth environment in the U.S., the sort of stagnation that we're likely to see, that isn't a big robust sign for things like base metals and copper. And I would say one thing on infrastructure, that's probably a place where you can get targeted stimulus done. I think that some of the traditional Republicans outside of Trump, you know, the McConnells of the world and so on down here, would probably go along with a reasonable level of infrastructure spending. And obviously the Democrats would be big proponents of it. So I think, you know, when I say that we're not going to get a huge stimulus bill, I think there's likely to be some targeted infrastructure done, because especially congressmen on both sides of the aisle know that it helps buy votes in their districts. But it's not going to be, again, this $2 trillion, $3 trillion, you know, Green New Deal, you know, all this infrastructure, new highways, new bridges, new this, new that. That's not going to happen with a divided Congress. So, again, that's why I say from an overall standpoint, it's not going to move the needle in a huge way, the way we see with, say, you know, China's stimulus coming out of the great financial crisis.
All right. Final comments deal with the bond market. Yields, especially on the long end, are rising. They had a little bit of a hit on, I believe it was Thursday, but Friday they're ending the week strong. That's been said because of the non-farms payroll report, but there is an uptrend here for long-term yields. Is that sustainable?
You know, I think, again, in a slow growth environment, but one where the economy is has been gradually coming back from the COVID threshold, you know, the sort of black hole we're staring into there, I think the multi-week, multi-month gradual move higher in yields, you know, we're not going to gain back much of that ground, but I don't see an environment where yields are just going to take off. Again, part of the reason they've been rising recently is the expectation of a huge borrow and spend, you know, blue wave type, massive infrastructure, massive fiscal aid and so on, all that stuff happening. We've lost that, right? So while I don't think treasuries are a huge bull story where I'm expecting huge price run-ups and huge yield declines in the near to intermediate term, I also don't expect the opposite. I think, you know, treasuries are going to kind of just mark time. So it's going to be a little bit of a boring market. You know, the caveat to that would be, you know, if COVID does kind of get out of control and we see real fear return to the market, and the Fed's like, holy cow, we got to buy, you know, even more treasuries even sooner, then you could get a situation where prices rise pretty quickly. But, you know, I'm more kind of in a neutral camp as far as interest rates are concerned.
All right, Mike, we're going to wrap it up there. Really appreciate your comments, as always. It was an entertaining week in the sense that we were going to chat on Wednesday, and we kept pushing it back for a bit more clarity, and we kind of have clarity, but it seems like this is going to be just another added topic for everyone to consider, the whole election fighting through the rest of this year. And boy, oh boy, there's a lot on everyone's radar, rightfully so. Mike, thanks for your time this weekend, buddy. Have a great weekend.
Thank you.